This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. A lot of the people that we have featured here on the Magic Word Podcast have been lecturers who have gone across the country here and given us the benefit of their years of wisdom and imparting this great magical knowledge to us. And they come in all sizes, shapes, and ages. And this week we have a young magician, about 24 years old, from the West Coast, and his name is Eric Stevens. And Eric really is one of those guys really who has really thought a lot about magic and continues to think about it and is still trying to find his own character. And but he seems to have a good handle on where he wants to go and what he's going to be doing. As I said, he cares a lot about magic, and I think what you're going to be finding in this podcast here today are a lot of tips on how that you can focus in on your audience and what it's going to take to entertain them by knowing what you are and who you are first. And so this is kind of a journey, I guess, of introspection, of trying to figure out, you know, who you are and also how you come about to create your different ideas based upon some of the suggestions that Eric gives you here in this podcast. But I find it pretty fascinating. There are a lot of things that he gives us that are some ideas from his lecture that he teaches. So if you haven't had a chance to catch his lecture, then you can get some of the ideas from this. And also, kind of on the front end of this, talks a little bit about what it's like traveling on the road and the difficulties that he's had, particularly because in the U.S. that you have to be, I believe it's 25 years old before you can rent a car. And so he was unable to rent a car as he was traveling around. So he tells us about some of those issues that he's had then as well. Anyhow, I think you're going to find this pretty fascinating and quite deep and intellectual to a degree as well, that you might be learning a lot of good stuff from my guest, Eric Stevens, this week on The Magic Word. Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. And today I have with me a magician who has been traveling around the country, and he's been on an extensive lecture tour from one coast to the other. He's actually from Los Angeles. I had him starting over on the East Coast and then traveling back up into Chicago, down here to Houston, and back home to L.A. But while in Houston, have a good opportunity to snag him for a little while. Someone perhaps that you may have seen at the lecture when he was at your city, and if not, you missed a very good lecture. Just ask any of us who had attended his lecture along the way. He had about 10 different cities that he had lectured in along his path. And for his young years, he is, I think, advanced beyond that from the standpoint of his expertise and his knowledge and his in-depth and insightful thinking that is evident not only in the creations that he has presented. He's got some things that are available through Penguin, as well as completed an at-the-table lecture for Murphy's Magic. It's a little over 2 hours long, which I would encourage you to take a listen to. And he's got a couple of lecture notes that are available in PDF through Penguin as well. And then one of which he actually sells at his lecture tour. So if you happen to get a chance to see this young man, please do. But now you're going to get to hear from him, and we'll talk a little bit about some of the things that were in his lecture and some of his thinking and philosophy. Please welcome my guest, Mr. Eric Stevens. Hi, Eric.
Hey, how you doing, Scott?
I am fantastic, and I'm very glad to have you here. It's been a lot of fun, certainly. Have you been enjoying the tour so far?
I have, and while there have been some challenges along the way, most of which I was not expecting,
yeah,
I have very much enjoyed my time traversing the country, being able to connect with people from all across different cities, examining how they think, how they choose to approach magic. And
you find that it's different? I mean, as far as like from one, not just from one club to the next, but perhaps do you think there are differences as far as regional differences, I'm trying to say, as opposed to club differences? I see you nodding your head. How so?
I feel that there are certain regions wherein those clubs have a similar mindset to magic. So, for example, when it comes to those clubs in Chicago or surrounding areas, really the Illinois clubs, those people have been around Magic for a long time, especially
right.
because of the Magic scene that was present many years ago with the Shulians and Marlowe and a variety of those other well-known
Jay Marshall and all those guys.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so due to that, understanding the history of Magic and understanding how it has come to be in its various forms is much more prominent and important than it is in other areas. For example, smaller clubs that don't necessarily get access to those people or those texts or that information focus more on the love for the craft. Not to say that those in Illinois or similar areas have no love, because they absolutely do, but more along the lines of the emotion behind it versus technicality.
Interesting. Yeah, and also I think an appreciation for the history of it. As you said, you know, perhaps that larger city like Chicago that's got a rich history of magic and magicians, as opposed to a smaller club where... Did you find that, what was the average age? I mean, would it vary also? Clubs, some were younger, some older?
Generally, the clubs featured an age range from anywhere to probably early 40s to late 70s. It mm-hmm. really just depended. Occasionally, there would be a few younger members,
mm-hmm.
But it was generally an older crowd, a more experienced
right,
crowd.
Right. Have you noticed then also as far as some of the expertise based upon, you know, the clubs and the general demographic, I guess, as far as having, you know, some that you don't have to explain? I mean, I know like last evening, I mean, we in Houston have a pretty advanced group of people, and we have
yes.
magicians all the time. And so whenever that you're explaining something, you know, doing Escanio spread, everybody's going, I got it. I understand. You know?
Yes. There was no need to go into great depth with what to them is mm-hmm. a rather simple and obvious
mm-hmm.
move or technique, because they've been exposed to it and they know it
right.
by rote. There are a few groups which vary in terms of skill level. For example, you'll have mostly hobbyists. That's very common.
Mm-hmm.
The people that love the magic and buy the magic and enjoy listening to it and learning
right.
about it. But there are very rarely those that work it in the real world. At the most, you'll get maybe two people that go out there and,
mm-hmm.
and maybe they have a residency in a restaurant. Sometimes, I think there were one, maybe two examples where there were quite a few more, generally restaurant magicians
mm-hmm.
or kids magicians.
Right.
But the overwhelming majority is hobbyists. Not
right.
that that's a bad thing at all.
Right, right. Now, you had done a few lectures last year, and
yes.
So people know, by the way, as far as Eric's age is 24, he's going to be 25 here this summer.
July.
And so I'm just stating that just because I know that you have to be 25 in order to rental car.
Exactly. So, contact me for my address. I accept gifts of all kinds.
but you had lectured last year. So what I'm getting to, I guess, is that at your young age that you are learning some of the pitfalls of going out on a lecture tour. And so as there are those who perhaps maybe older or younger or who might want to go out on their first tour, have you got some tips or advice or things that you have learned along the way?
Oh, most definitely.
Here we go.
For me, as I mentioned earlier, there have been quite a few instances where life just got in the way. And I liked
mm-hmm.
to describe it to Scott as Murphy's Law punching me in the face every few feet. And what can go wrong will go wrong eventually. You can prepare as much as you like, but inevitably something is going to come up that you weren't prepared for.
Mm-hmm.
But you can try your best. You can pay attention to what's going on around you. Talk to other magicians you know. That's what I did when I went on my first tour, which, unlike this one, it was a bit sporadic. I flew out, did two or three lectures, flew back. A month later, flew out, did another two lectures, flew back. A week later, went out, did it again.
Yeah.
And with those lectures, because they were one after the other, and then I had a bit of downtime, I didn't have to worry so much about the pitfalls. But with this month-long away-from-home kind of thing, you really have to sit down and say, okay, what could happen? What are my resources? What do I have available to me? And some of your best resources are magician friends who have gone out and done it.
Right.
I talked to any magician I knew. I called him up and said, hey, I knew you went on a lecture tour. I knew you did this and did that. Do you have any advice for me? What should I be prepared for? What sort of experiences did you have? What mistakes did you make that maybe I can learn from?
Mm-hmm.
And I took a lot of that away and applied it. But I'll give you a really quick example here. I was trying to get from Raleigh, North Carolina to Chicago. From Wisconsin back down to Chicago. And then from there to Tulsa. And I purchased a Greyhound ticket, and that was three buses, a 24-hour trip. So the bus from Wisconsin to Milwaukee was perfectly fine. There were no issues. But when I got to Milwaukee, I was informed that the bus...
Well, Milwaukee is in Wisconsin. You mean actually from Appleton?
Excuse me, from Appleton. That's correct. Excuse me. Yes, from Appleton, Wisconsin to Milwaukee, Wisconsin, that was fine. But Milwaukee down to... Chicago, that bus had been canceled, and they didn't tell me until I got there,
yeah,
because they had canceled all those buses due to weather. So now I had to figure out how to get to Chicago before that bus left for Oklahoma, mm-hmm. because if I missed it, I'd be in trouble. And I had to talk to the people at the counter. I said, look, are there any other resources that you have? Because no one's available to drive me down there. What can I do? And they said, well, there's a shuttle here, and you can pay X amount of dollars for the shuttle. It'll take you to O'Hare. Then once you go from O'Hare to Chicago using the Blue Line, you can walk a couple of blocks, and it'll take you to the Greyhound station.
Mm-hmm.
But at the time, that was more money than I was willing to spend. And I did everything I could to find a solution, and eventually I just had to bite the bullet. And I think what it really comes down to is sometimes you just have to kind of suck it up and go, you know, I did my best, but right now, you know, I may not want to spend this money or make this choice or drive 4 hours with this person,
mm-hmm.
but if it gets the job done, if it gets me to where I need to go, if it helps me fulfill my commitment,
mm-hmm.
I will do it.
And talking about the commitment, I think that's important as well, to be good advice to other people as far as fulfilling that commitment.
Yes.
Do you want to address that?
Yes, most certainly. So Scott here set up my lecture tour, this particular leg,
mm-hmm.
and that was a total of 11 cities, 11 different lecture dates. And up to this point, I have managed to fulfill 8 of the 9 that were scheduled. One of them I had to cancel, and I was stricken. Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, 8 of the 9 that have been scheduled
up to this point. Yes,
up to this point. Mm-hmm. And I had to cancel the one in Springfield, Illinois, much to my own heartbreak, simply because I did everything I possibly could. Mm-hmm. I searched down every avenue, talked to every person I could, looked up as many forms of transportation as I could, just compared all the prices. What can I do? And it just wasn't going to work out. And I had to make that phone call and say, look, I'm so sorry. Here's what I did. Here were my attempts. Here was my effort that I put into it. I want you to know that though we are canceling, I'd like to maybe try to do this again, maybe next year. I want to be there for you because mm-hmm. I made that commitment. I don't want that client, that customer, that audience, those people who were expecting
sure.
me to feel like I'm skipping out on them and not doing my best to fulfill that commitment. And I've been fortunate enough to make it to all of these lectures because I tried to go
despite
above
the hardship
and beyond.
Of some of the transportation,
especially
issues.
Yes, I could have easily quit.
Mm-hmm.
Easily, I could have gone, you know what? Screw this. I'm tired of this. I don't want to spend all this money. I don't want all this hardship. I don't want to be in these hotel rooms for a month. I just want to go home. I mm-hmm. could have done that, but I chose not to because that would have been doing a disservice to the people who would have paid good money to see what mm-hmm. I had to say, who would have driven two, three, 4 hours, as right. some did last night. And one of my previous lectures, I had a guy drive 100 miles all the way from Texas up to Lake Charles, Louisiana, just to see me. Mm-hmm. And that was really inspiring that someone was willing to take that time. So if those kinds of people are willing to do that, why should I not be willing to do the same for them?
Right. That's a good point. You know, I recall one time I had a show that was for, I was living in Dallas, and I'd booked a show here in Houston, and my wife and I were going to be doing, it was a relatively large stage show, and we flew in, but unfortunately, there was a terrible thunderstorm, which delayed flights arriving in Dallas. And that was well before cell phones. I couldn't contact anybody. They knew what the weather was going to be like. I told them what time I was going to be arriving and getting a rental car and getting over to set up. And I should have had hours of time before to get this whole thing prepared. Long story short, by the time that we actually got there after the delays, I remember going into the room in the banquet facility, and there were some waiters cleaning up and busboys and whatnot. And I said, "Is this the room for such and such?" And they said, "Yes." And I said, "Where are they?" They said, "Well, they left. It's over. You know, it's done." I mean, I was there for the cleanup. So I really felt bad. And so I had contacted my contact and said, "Look, I had made a commitment to you." And she said, "Well, I assumed that it must have been the weather and we couldn't reach you." And I said, "Yeah, I was in the plane. We were waiting on the tarmac, et cetera. There was nothing I could do." And I said, "I tell you what, because I'd made that commitment and because it was something really, it was an act of God, that nothing, you know, it could just as easily have said, well, sorry, you know, that for both of us.
Could have done a bit of a cop out and said, well, you know, what was I supposed to do
about
it?
Do.
It's not my fault.
It was something that was beyond my control, but also not an easy thing for me, like driving across town to do the show. We had to fly into town. But I said, since I'd made that commitment, and despite that, I will come back again at a future meeting when you get together. And that's exactly what happened, is I came back, and they had already made a deposit, and I kept that. And I said, you know, then no other fee is going to be necessary beyond that, because that, you know, you had people who had come to this dinner and everything.
Sure.
So I wanted to fulfill that commitment that I had made out of my own pocket, basically, because I think that that goes further.
They deserved it.
They deserved it. You know, whether they're telling other people or not, I felt better about myself, you know, for finishing up with that, which comes to the point sometimes whenever that you have a client who calls you and you book the show and then you get a better paying gig that comes in, you know, then that becomes a financial quandary. Should I send someone?
A moral quandary.
Yeah, basically, yeah. You know, should you or should you not? And, you know, I have learned from experience, you stick with the, you know, you dance with the one who brung you, like they say.
And I think that one thing I'd like to stress specifically to anyone who is thinking of attempting such a tour, whether you be young or old or in between, for me, I think that an important thing to keep in mind is if these situations happen, if the act of God occurs, if you're stuck on the tarmac, if you lost all your luggage and you have no props, if this sort of thing happens, and they do, and they will.
Yeah.
You need to make sure that you do everything you can to contact that person and say, here's what happened. Just be upfront, be open, be honest, and let them know what's going on. Mm-hmm. Because the longer you continue to remain hidden, the longer you keep them in the dark about it simply due to shame, is the longer that darkness in their heart will sort of encroach and go, well, do I really trust this guy anymore?
Mm-hmm.
And one of the hardest conversations I had to have was with my parents, because due to another error, another issue, my bank, due to a glitch in the computer system, accidentally processed and sent out a new debit card to my address,
mm-hmm.
which means that the debit card I have with me is now a useless piece of plastic. And in most of the areas I've been in, there are no branches of my bank.
Mm-hmm.
So all I've got on hand is my cash, which means any purchases I need to make online are unavailable to me. So I had to call my parents more than once and say, I'm so sorry. I apologize that I have to do this, but here's the situation. Here's what's going on. Would you please help me?
Mm-hmm.
And I think magicians especially, but people in general, but magicians especially have issues asking for help. if you really need it, there are people out there who are willing to assist you. There are people that care. Just because some magicians are loners doesn't mean that everyone is.
Right.
And I feel like you need to be the better man or woman, whether you be girl, guy. If you're doing magic and you're in that situation, step up and take control of the situation before it takes control of you.
Yeah. I wanted to go down a different road of something that we had discussed briefly yesterday, and then you went into more detail in the lecture, having to do with the importance of expectations and when the magic actually happens. In other words, talking about countdowns.
Yes. Yes, the countdown. I explain in my lecture that I like to use countdowns in my magic quite often. And though it may sound like a bit of a strange technique, it's incredibly effective. And it's due to the fact that a countdown is something we learn when we're very, very young. Whether it's in a, or whether it has a positive connotation or a negative connotation, it always means that you are leading up to something. A countdown tells you that something is about to happen. You may not know what it is yet, but you know something is going to occur. There will be an event of some kind. And so I believe that a lot of magic for the audience member or members is missing the vital moment. Because a great deal of magicians, whether they mean to or not, tend to speed things up a bit more than they should. Sometimes it's because they're nervous. Sometimes it's because they just want to get it over with so they can say they did it. Other times it's because they don't realize they're going too fast. Mm-hmm. But often, magicians don't allow the audience members to absorb the impact of that moment because they've passed it by.
Of the moment when the magic actually happens.
Exactly. And mm-hmm. so perception of the moment is practically non-existent.
When you snap your fingers, clap your hands or something, rather than just saying it's already done.
Precisely. Mm-hmm. So for me, and I'll give you an example of something that I do in my lecture, I will have coins in my hands and I'll have everyone stare at the coins. I'll say, watch carefully. And I lean in, and when I lean in, everybody else leans in, and they're paying even more attention. And I say very slowly, very carefully, very deliberately, 3, 2, 1. And as I lead them along that path, every person in that audience is going, yes, okay, what's about to happen, and now they're paying very close attention.
They're laser focused on
exactly
the moment.
Exactly right.
They know the moment is coming.
And if you've choreographed it correctly, if you've timed it well, and that takes practice and repetition mm-hmm. to understand how to get that correct. It takes years of practice to really understand it. Not to say that those who have been in magic for a short time can't do it, mm-hmm. but as we know, the longer you do anything, the better you get at it, the more you get out of it.
Well, you would think the better you get at it. Sometimes that's just the longer you're at it, the longer you're at it. That doesn't necessarily mean, you know what I'm saying?
Touché.
They're still doing it the same old way, but they have not learned.
That's very true. Mm-hmm. And a perfect example in my lecture, the very first effect that I teach is called the one-armed man. It's a Monty routine. And I have a queen face up in between two tens. And you can see it out jogged. And I start pushing it in slowly using that countdown. 3, 2, 1. And as soon as it's square, I say, now it becomes a little more difficult because you have to remember what you saw. Where was that queen? They'll guess the middle. And I say, that's correct. But you may have missed the moment that it turned face down. And now, when you do your Ascanio spread, it appears that that queen has flipped face down. But they saw the card face down because they were watching you, because you led them down that way, down that path. You provided them structure. You helped build that bridge. You said, here's what I'm trying to create. And those people now can say, oh, here's something that I want to contribute. And really, at that particular time, their contribution is attention.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's important. Yeah, whether that you don't want to go to 10 or something. I mean, obviously, I think the longer it is, the more boring that can certainly become. So it's 3-2-1 or 1-2-3, just as you say, that we are finally attuned to the countdown method as you're a child. You know, don't, you know, I'm going to count to 10 sometimes, they'll say, yes. You know, don't let me, or, you know, I'm going to count to 3 and then we're going to be going, or you're back counting 3.
Most certainly. And I'm not going to suggest that you use the countdown method in that way for every routine.
But you can do that in your mind.
Fit.
You know,
exactly.
That's something that...
You can time it in with your inner self, with your inner mind, your inner magician going, okay, I'm going to move from point A to point B in this routine, mm-hmm. but that requires certain beats, and I want the audience to be able to follow those beats. So I'm going to slow down a little bit, count in my head, and by that time...
Well, you can use a physical gesture as well to beat with that. So this way,
course.
As you're moving your
yes.
hand, people can count 1, 2, 3. You know, I'm going to do this.
That's a great idea.
You're going to
yeah.
see this in just the, you know, in the count of three without even saying anything by moving your hand or when you're tapping with the wand or whatever, you know, something. I'm thinking back for an example.
Audio cues are often very helpful.
Yes. Fielding West, who had brilliantly talked about using a pendulum in order to, that you practice with a pendulum. So this way that later in live performance that you know that you're thinking back, you know, that you're letting time to pause 1, 2, 3 as you're kind of, you know, imagining.
As any good musician would as
yeah.
well.
And he had pointed out something, I believe it was Buddy Hackett, who had, he said, if you go back and look at some of his comedy routines, that he will swing his hand like a pendulum. So he is doing that to himself physically. No one else, unless you know what he's doing, he's actually, you know, counting the beat, you know, with his hand as it's swinging back and forth as a pendulum, to allow the maximum opportunity for that joke to sink
in. He's building his own structure.
Correct. Yeah, yeah. So I think that's something also, yeah, what you're talking
that's
about.
That's great, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
There were a few things also that you had brought up that I liked. It was not just, you know, trick explanation, but also...
I try to avoid that as much as I can.
And you were successful. I believe it was kind of cool that you had some other things that you were talking about, like intent and purpose and keeping it simple, you know, just some very important points. You don't have to go into detail, but can you reiterate what those...
Yes, so there are three terms that I think every magician and even mentalist should pay attention to, although I think it applies more to magicians.
Mm-hmm.
Intent is the first word. Intent is the first word. Then we have meaning is the second word. Of the three, I think that's probably the most important. And then... And now I can't remember what that third word was. Let's see, we had intent, meaning, and...
Remember you were talking about keeping it simple, you know, what Vernon had
yes.
said too.
Well, that wasn't really one of the words. I do talk about the idea of kiss.
Yeah.
Keep it simple, stupid. And I think that's a very underused...
Acronym,
exactly. I think that more people, more performers can apply that to mm-hmm. to whatever it is that they're doing, whether it's a magician, a juggler, something like that. And while a juggler truly can impress the audience with the more balls you toss in the air, sometimes just a few is enough. Because
yeah.
most people go, well, I can't do that, so good for you that you can do that, and I really like that, so I'm going to keep watching this.
Yeah.
And yes, you can elevate those levels, elevate the suspense by increasing another ball and another ball, or you can do what some people do, which is take chainsaws and turn them on and spin them around and mm-hmm. do all sorts of crazy stuff I am not brave enough to do.
Swords or fire or something.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly right. But for me, I think that magicians can... think differently about their magic. And I mentioned that in the beginning of the lecture. It's not about me telling you that I'm better than you or that I know better or that my material is better. I'm just different and I think about my magic differently. And by the end, I hope you do too.
What are you bringing to the table? I mean, where is it? I say bring to the table. What are you bringing to your creativity that is from your life. In other words, you have something different everyone does. Of course, their personality dictates, you know, what you're going to perform, which is different from what I do, from what anybody would do. But what is it that you draw on, I guess, that gives you your creative muse?
Well, my parents and my sister and my aunt and really most of my family members are very, very creative people in their own ways. And I'm not the kind of person that can paint. I can't draw very well.
You're musically inclined,
though. I am relatively musically inclined. I play multiple instruments, but I don't play any of them so well that I'm going to be in Carnegie Hall someday. I play them because they bring me joy, mm-hmm. but not because I'm really any good. For what it's worth, I am much more apt at finding value in something than I am in creating value. And when I was a kid, I found value in my storybooks. I found value in my Legos, building things, building new worlds that I could escape in. I was bullied as a kid very, very often. I had a tough childhood in that sense, and I always felt like, you know, maybe I wasn't good enough. Maybe my thoughts weren't good enough. Maybe what I had to bring to the table, whether it was school or home, just wasn't good enough. So I would often ensconce myself in my room and bury my nose in my books and escape to this world where everything would be okay. And that story or set of stories was often fantasy-based.
Mm-hmm.
And I found
that... Like we were talking about Narnia.
Exactly. Yeah. We were talking about the Chronicles of Narnia and C.S. Lewis's story earlier. And for me, magic is inherently ridiculous. It is. It's mm-hmm. it's a fantastical concept, a fantastical medium that us as entertainers try to use to create this appearance of what we call magic. And so when I perform, I take inspiration from those storybooks, from those storytellers,
yeah.
where they were able to convey this land, these people, these images, painting these pictures in your head saying, this is what I'd like you to feel. This is what I want you to see. And here's what you might want to feel. Mm-hmm. And you felt those things, but you also felt other things. And I liked how that made me feel. So when I perform, I try to instill those things in others, and my creations are often things that exist, things that have been out there already, but drawing on my desire to help others find value.
I'm confused still about that, because as far as finding content rather than creating the content, you know, that you're more interested in that because you are a creator and of several things. And as a magician, we create wonder then as well.
Yes.
And you're trying to create certain feelings. If you're working in a trade show, you're trying to create desire to purchase whatever, different kinds of things. So, but that's not what you're talking about.
Not exactly. I don't really believe that we can create emotion, that we can create those emotions for people.
Well, that's what advertising is all about. Every little 60-second ad that you watch, you know, or less, or billboards, you know, are trying to create a desire.
To a certain degree, I don't think it's even those are truly creating anything. What they're doing is they're bringing forth what already exists inside you. So as a magician or as an advertiser or as any other kind of person that requires emotion to do your job, for me, I like to try and bring that forth. But I'm not telling you what to bring forth. I'm not saying I want you to be mad at this moment. I want you to be happy. I want you to feel sad. I'm saying here are the emotions that you could feel. Here's what I'm feeling.
As a creator,
but you as an audience member may experience something completely different based on your own life and what you've seen and what you've heard.
here's your opportunity to pick and choose.
That's true, because it could be that someone, for an example, maybe thinking about buying a car, for an example, and then they see three billboards, you know, today and two commercials and, on television and six more on the radio or whatever, and that they're more attuned to that, I guess, because they're open and listening and looking for a purchase like that. So you're bringing that out. But for those who aren't looking for a car, it's just blah, blah, blah.
Yes, yes. And as magicians, the last thing we want to be to people is blah, blah, blah. The last thing we want to be is so what?
Mm-hmm. We want to be relevant. Well, how do you make your magic relevant? I mean, I've heard Penn & Teller, for an example, say that it's important that you touch a person, that you be you speak to them at a cerebral level of the individual. And that's why I think it's important, like if you use somebody's wedding ring or whatever, that it's very important to them. You don't make light of it. You don't make fun of it and say a bunch of jokes, although I do. But you should treat it with the reverence that it demands, I believe,
yes.
Because it's a very personal thing. Just like you don't make fun of someone's name, although sometimes they're easy targets. But you don't, because that's
you
personal.
You could take
thing.
The easy way out,
you can.
But you shouldn't.
That's exactly right. That's right. Right. But what I'm saying is, though, that you need to, from what they've said, and I agree with, to kind of paraphrase, I guess, here, is to do magic that is on an emotional level, because if you do, then it becomes more personal and something that they're going to remember a lot longer, as opposed to doing what Michael Marr would call bubblegum for the eyes, you know, something that's just kind of fun to
watch.
I
always love that phrase.
Yeah, that's just, it's fun, you know, but it doesn't move me, and
it doesn't make me want to see more.
No, it's not like listening.
Not in the sense of what some people can do.
It's like listening to Muzak, you know, elevator music. I mean, I don't listen to some elevator music and say, man, I want to go to the theater tonight and go hear the orchestra as a result of listening to that.
How many times have you been in an elevator and gone, yeah, I know that tune? Probably.
Yeah, like Baby's Got Back.
Yeah, maybe once or twice, but highly unlikely that has ever been a thought in your head. When it comes to being relevant, you could technically define in society relevance as something that's hot, something that's new, something that's popping, if anyone uses that word anymore. But very old-fashioned,
well,
I'm sorry.
You tell me, you're 24, I don't know.
That's right. But I know what's relevant to me. And through my observations, I know what's relevant to other people, or at least I can guess, I can infer.
Mm-hmm.
And if you pay close enough attention to the people you're performing for, and even the people who are maybe just standing around watching that you don't necessarily engage with, you can infer that they're going to respond perhaps a certain way, whether it's physically, it's audibly. You can say, okay, maybe I'm performing such and such set for a group of teenagers that are within this age range.
Mm-hmm.
And if I perform for another group of teenagers a month down the road within the same age range, chances are they're probably going to respond relatively well to that same set. Doesn't mean they will, because you don't know for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But chances are a younger crowd will appreciate this or this or this, versus perhaps an older group of people that see it and go, oh, well, that's nice.
Yeah.
Because generally, if you try to approach magic in an from an intellectual standpoint, it becomes, as we know, more of a puzzle than anything else.
Yeah. And as Vernon said, that magic, confusion is not magic.
Yes. And I do love intellectual magic to many degrees, but I think that's because I love puzzles. I love trying to figure them out. I enjoy them very much.
And a lot of illusions to me are puzzles, you know, that there are some that certainly they could be made to look magic, but whenever that, let's say that you are doing the cube zag or something, you know, and then the lady sticks her hand back out and waves a scarf, well, suddenly it becomes a puzzle. I mean, it should be that she has disappeared. I mean, it comes down to what is the effect. Is the effect supposed to be, is it a guessing game and a puzzle? Where did she go? And I mean, rather not where did she go, but rather how is she folding herself into that position, as opposed to she must have disappeared because I don't see any part of her body anymore. But when she sticks out her arm, then to me, you see what I'm saying, the difference?
Yes,
there?
I definitely see that. And if you've read Eric Mead's book, Tangled Web, which if you haven't, you should, yeah. most definitely, he mentions being in the home of a famous writer. And on that writer's desk, he mentions seeing a sticky note that says, "What is the desired effect?"
Mm-hmm.
What is the desired effect? And I read that, and instantly I took a sticky note. I wrote that same thing down, and I stuck it on my computer, and I said, okay, what is the desired effect?
Mm-hmm.
Is your desired effect a puzzle, or is it an emotional unbalancing?
Mm-hmm.
Are you toying with them mentally, or are you trying to make them look at their world a little bit differently?
Those two different things. That's a good point. Yeah. Well, you know, one of the things that's popular now is Joshua Jay's balance. And I've had some very scholarly and esoteric conversations through Facebook and live with some people, most notably with Brad Henderson, who thinks deeply about magic and loves magic passionately, and had spent a lot of time with me and talking about, well, what is the effect? You know, what are you trying to do? And here are some things, you know, that I have done that I thought clarified this, and it has taken it out of a different realm of what some people have been doing, but still, Brad had some wonderful touches on that that certainly makes sense without going into a whole lot of detail about all of this. The point is that most people know what I'm talking about, balance being the new trick, where that you have a water bottle and then you have a toothbrush that's balanced on it, then a pencil and then a card box and then a crayon box. And so the point being is that it's an impossible kind of a thing that looks like a puzzle and is a puzzle to some audience if you don't present it properly, I believe.
Although my issue with it, and I love Josh, he's great.
Yeah.
Personally, though, I'm not a fan of balance. And not to say it doesn't look good, but if it's meant to be something impossible, the fact that it is happening in front of your audience makes it inherently possible.
Hmm.
And so I don't look at it as anything more than, again, a puzzle, because I think to myself, well, you could, in theory, stick this here and that would work. Oh, well, now the crayon is off to a jaunty angle on mm-hmm. the crayon box. Yes, technically you cannot do that, but it's happening in front of me, so what could he have done to do that? I think balance in comparison to other effects is a little bit more of a challenge to the spectators, to the audiences, to the participants than some other magic effects,
mm-hmm.
rather than being
it's more
an
of a
illusion.
Challenge, you're saying.
Exactly. I don't look at it as magic. Because it's because I'm biased. Maybe it's because I'm jaded for doing this for so many years, but I feel that even lay people would probably see that as a challenge to go, okay, now I'm gonna sit here and try to figure this out.
Yeah, but I think that, like really any other trick, has to do with the presentation you wrap around it. That can take it from a puzzle effect to a magic effect.
Agreed.
It is a lot more challenging with that particular trick to make it into a trick as opposed to appearing to be a puzzle.
And that's the irony of it. You need a challenge to dissipate the challenge.
Well, isn't that the irony of magic in itself? You know, that when magic is perfect, you detect nothing. In other words, that only magicians can appreciate the subtlety, the sleight of hand, the psychology and everything behind making an illusion, whereas the audience doesn't see the duck swimming under the water, you know, so rapidly, you know, getting these things done. But if you slip one thing, or you move too quickly, or, you know, there's a flash or something, oop, that ruins the whole trick. You know,
the
in other
illusion
words,
is
that's
broken.
That's the blemish on the glass. You may as well destroy it as a glass blower would do. If there is a blemish, they start all to break it and, you know, melt it down, start all over. And with magic, you're pretty much hung out to dry and not much you could do.
With that being said, I think it's important to note that for those people out there who are looking to create, or who are already creating their own material, you need to have that mindset of a glass blower. You need to look at that and say, okay, I think it's good now, but you won't know unless you try it for real people.
Mm-hmm.
Eugene Berger always told me, the most important tool a magician can have is someone who will tell you the truth. So you need to find someone who will be perfectly honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not always your family, it's not always your friends, but oftentimes the most brutal honesty comes from strangers in the real world.
That's true, but you also have to be real and honest with yourself and knowing
exactly
who you are, what you're trying to present. I just spoke recently
with
Les Arnold, and he has a character that is, he said, I'm really not a bumbling magician where things are going wrong. He has a little bit different kind of an act where it's, he's making fun of himself, I guess, almost like Cardini from the standpoint that things are mysteriously happening as opposed to Cole and Company where things go wrong. You see the difference?
Yes, absolutely.
And then his daughter, who Dazzle is her stage name, where she is over the top kind of, dancing and, the makeup and the dress and everything.
Yes.
Whereas he is in classic tales and trying to do, this classical act. So it's a funny kind of surreal type of thing. But the point is that he knows what his character and should be, their characters are in the act. And they have tried different things and thrown them out because he said, I don't think this fits for the direction that I want to go. Even at the expense, extreme expense, he was telling me about, long story short, where he had built a small tank, that the effect jumbo sidekick, where that, you shoot the gun, and the card, ultimately, will have the pip fall off, from the table,
sure,
that the fringe falls off and everything. But he had something else where that ultimately that he had covered this tank. It was a small kind of a tank that he's, inside the thing, he's got like a mobile scooter kind of a thing that people who are impaired, would tool around when you go to a magic convention. You see some gold guys driving that thing. Anyhow, that's inside this tank. So the thing is, it's pretty good size, but they drape it. And at the end, when they're shooting like a bazooka at it or something, that it disappears. And then Dazzle ends up in the back of the audience and she comes forward or something. It's a great trick and everything they put it together. Again, I'm just giving you a few parts of that. He discussed this in more detail on the podcast. But it was after practicing it and then doing it two or three times, he just felt like this does not fit the character.
It wasn't adding anything.
That we are trying to present. This is not for me. So he said, I've got this available. Somebody wants to buy it. It's a great trick. I spent, thousands of dollars
it building
the whole
thing. It may fit you, even if it doesn't fit
right,
me.
But he knew without having someone tell him. I mean, they were telling him, hey, it's a great trick.
Because it felt wrong.
He didn't feel like this is me, because that's not the classic style plus the comedy she was adding and whatnot. So you've got to be true to yourself. But you also do have to, as you say, then have to listen to what other people are telling you. And there again, to make sure that it's going to be somebody who is trusted and knows what they're talking about. Oftentimes comedians don't take advice from people who are giving them jokes because although they might be funny, they don't know where it came from. And it could be that they may have heard this joke from someone else's routine and they say, ooh, that's good. That'll fit for me. And then they do it. And then in a roundabout way, they find out later, well, that joke belonged to so-and-so. Yeah. And that, you stole it. Well, no, I didn't. Someone told me about that. Well, it's kind of a...
Yes,
difficult.
And as a creator, you need to be much, much more discerning than you ever were before. Sometimes
good point.
You need to be willing to throw the baby out with the bathwater, so to speak, because you may love this trick as more than you've loved anything else in your entire life.
Mm-hmm.
But if at its core, it doesn't fit, it's not playing, you kind of have to sit down with yourself and have a kind of a heart-to-heart chat with your own heart, with your own mind, and go, maybe it's time to let this go because it's just not working.
Right.
And I know it's hard. I've done it myself so many times. I think most of us who have created magic have at one point or another. I had some things that I've come up with where I went, man, this is going to be the greatest. It looks great in front of a mirror. It looks great in front of a camera. Cameras are always better to practice with besides a mirror.
Right.
Because a mirror, you'll lie to yourself. You often blink at the moment the move happens and convince yourself it was good. But a camera will be honest with you. But back to what we were talking about before, you can think this is the greatest thing since sliced bread, but if it's clearly not working and you've got people telling you it's not working and you're not getting the reaction you thought you would get or the reaction you wanted to get, and sometimes the reaction you get isn't what you expected, and that's still a good reaction. You have to really pay very close attention and try to understand, who am I as a character, as a magician, why am I doing what I'm doing? does this fit the goal I've set for myself? And if it doesn't, get rid of it. Scrap it. It's holding you down. It's not going to help you. Again, yeah, like you were saying, maybe someone else may find that to fit them a little bit better. But if it doesn't fit you, if it's not right, stop wasting your time on it.
Yeah. There, on the other hand, it, if you keep working on something, it could get better and you find that it does fit. I'm thinking, for an example, yes, that with David Copperfield's act where he had the alien, I think it was, and he, when I first saw that, it didn't seem to fit and work, but it was one of those things that after, of course, he's performing how many shows a day and, you know, every day of the year, and he has the opportunity to continue to work on these routines every day and try and fine tune it. So, okay, what was it that didn't work about that? And so he's able to kind of fiddle with it. But it's just he was mentally invested in that particular effect so much so that he was going to make it work, as opposed to saying it's just not working after the 20th or 200th time of it not working.
There is trial and error required always. Mm-hmm. But what I said before, I don't mean that like right at the beginning, if it's not working, get rid of it. Yeah. What I mean is after a certain period of time, after it's been a while, maybe you've tried several iterations and correct, it's still not working.
Then
that's really when you get rid of it.
It's telling you something.
Yeah, I didn't mean to do that like right at the beginning. Just go, well, this car didn't change color the way I thought it would.
Move on.
Yeah. Don't do that. I'm not trying to tell you to give up.
Yeah.
Because that's the last thing you should think about.
Right.
Try again. Think about, again, I know this is kind of a very common metaphor, but talking about, or a simile rather, when you're talking about Edison and the light bulb, you know, 1,001 ways not to do it, and only one way worked. Be like Edison. Try again, but, you know, it may not work.
Yeah.
You have to accept that it is a possibility.
Right.
That it's an impossibility.
But there are a lot of other things you might find along the way. For an example,
exactly,
just thinking about...
may spur other things, other ideas.
Yeah, the guy that he made peanut butter and, you know, peanut oil, different kinds of things that...
George Washington Carver,
is it? And he just had hundreds of ideas of things you could do with the peanut. You know, it's like, but and I don't know whether he had ultimately an idea of what he wanted to do, but in the, you know, finding these, well, along the way, well, this thing will work, so this is something you could do with it and whatever. I mean, there's so many things. So you might find some area, but also find multiple uses for it, I guess I'm saying, along the way.
Yes, and I'll give you a really quick example. My most recent book, Seeing Double, which you can find on Penguin and also on Amazon if you like physical books and not PDFs, one of my publications, or rather one of my effects that I've published in that book is called Stardust. And you apparently take a borrowed pen or pencil, or even your own, and you borrow a quarter, and you apparently penetrate the shadow of that coin.
Mm-hmm.
And I know it sounds very, very strange. It's difficult to explain it any
surreal,
other way.
Yeah.
And if Paul Draper's listening, Paul, I hope you listen, because you should. If you don't, you know, you've seen it. And I'm very, very proud of it. But that one was kind of an instant idea, where I went, well, here's a prop that exists, but what if you did this? Whereas there's something else in that book called the thumbless tip, which involves the thumb tip, something we all use, we've all used. It's been around for many, 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 many years, and most of us use it the same way.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, how unconventional can I get with this? And I tried so many different ways of using it, so many ways of hiding it, different methods over and over and over again, until I discovered the perfect way of using it, which allowed you to show your hands completely empty, no thumb tip on the fingers, on the thumb, nowhere to be seen, and you could cause a silk to vanish or reappear. It's incredibly clean,
mm-hmm,
and it seems truly impossible, because
yeah,
that doesn't become a puzzle anymore. There's nowhere you can go with that.
Yeah.
And that's, I'm very, very proud of that. So if you'd like to learn more, go ahead and seek that out. It's called Seeing Double.
As we start to wrap up, there are just a couple more areas that I want to go into. One is that you had mentioned last night, or asked the question to the group, and you said you had been asking this to all other groups, is what is your definition of magic?
Yeah, what is magic to you?
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing how many people don't have an answer. And I think it's because we don't think about it. We don't think that that's something we need to mull over in our heads.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody comes up to us day after day and says, oh, by the way, what is magic to you? How many times do you get that after a show? Probably very little.
Yeah.
But if someone were to ask me, my definition of it has been for years that magic is the gift of a moment, but it's up to us as human beings to decide which moment is the right one.
Right.
At least for us.
Yeah. My definition has always been that I believe magic is something that happens in the minds of the spectator for a moment in time, and our jobs as a magician is to make that moment of magic last as long as possible so that they take that belief that that experience for a longer time. Because I believe there's a moment where they go, oh, I think I know how that was done. They're not saying, I mean, I'm giving you what's going on in their mind. You know, they're not going to maybe say out loud, I know how it's done, but there's going to be that moment of just gasp. But there is a split second that they are fooled. And I think that's where magic happens. But our job is to have something so they can't backtrack and that it is completely fooling.
You have to magic weigh it.
Yes.
you got to tamarize that stuff.
I remember Alex Pandrea had something that I loved where he would, you know, have a card and, you know, have this put in the person's lady's purse or something saying, leave that, keep that, you know, that you can have this magic moment right now, you know, that we have done all these other things for right now, but I'm going to leave you then with this card. You can go home tonight. You can take it out even right now. Take a look at it and verify that this was actually the card and this, you know, came through. I'm telling you right now that's the card, but, you know, you're only going to prove it to yourself. It's kind of like Schrodinger's cat, you know, basically kind of a thing. Or you can tell people this experience and show them the back of the card or, you know, have it in your wallet or something.
Of course.
So you can talk about that and then explain to them, but I've never actually looked at it to reveal whether this is right, kind of a thing.
Yeah,
I like that.
And John Allen's book, Experience the Magic of John Allen, which was written by John Lovick, one of the first effects taught in it is an effect where a signed card appears in a sealed envelope and that's left with the people. And they can choose whether or not to believe him that the signed card has appeared in the envelope or to open it up and see if it really is.
Yeah.
And the thing is, it really is. It is there, but you still have that what if factor. And sometimes if you've presented it correctly, the what if factor will override the need to know.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to share something with you that I haven't before. And this goes back with my partner Banachek's first set of lecture notes called Pre-Thoughts. And Pre-Thoughts was an entire show. It was a show from start to finish. And the very first set of lecture notes had an ending that was part of his act. And then Max Maven had later come back and said, well, I have that in mind. And, you know, that's my ending. They were completely and independently done.
Conceived.
Exactly. But in deference to Max, that we took that out so that we put a different ending in the books for future editions of the, or all editions now of Pre-Thoughts. But the ending was that after he had kind of recapped everything that had happened and the person would be standing on stage with an envelope or whatever, let's say, and then, you know, that why wouldn't you believe what I'm telling you now would be true, that that's actually inside the envelope. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much. My name is Steve Shaw. And then he would walk off stage, leaving the audience member still on stage kind of with this envelope, like, well, what should I do?
Got to be honest, I never heard of this Steve Shaw guy. I got no clue. Sounds like someone I don't want to know about.
And that was the whole idea, you know, that he was relatively unknown to, as opposed to who Max Maven was, you know, and is. And so obviously, you know, it's okay, but that's fine. We'll, in deference, we'll do that. But the point is that 100% of the time, the person would take it out of the envelope, turn it around, and she, you know, she would gasp and then show the rest of the audience, and then they would have big applause, and then he could walk back on and take, you know, a bow if he wanted to, but typically would be already off the stage, and then, you know, that's the end of the show. I just kind of like that. I mean, it's like you're leaving it.
It's got the same feel to it.
Yeah, a similar feel, but it's for the whole audience, you know, but never has he had the experience where the person had actually walked off the stage without revealing what was in the envelope. Because even after they did, I'm sure once they got down there, people would say, well, what's in there? Let's take a look, you know.
Let's prove that
was correct.
That happened.
Yeah, kind of an interesting kind of a conclusion to the act.
Yeah,
over there.
For sure.
Well, listen, thanks very much for your time and also for all the words and things, you know, kind of giving us a, snippet of your lecture and different things. That now some of the things you've got then are available. I know you said like on Penguin, one of the PDFs, what's that called?
I have my Perspective 2018 lecture notes, which kind of overflowed into 2019. So but it's the same lecture, same material. My 2015 lecture notes called Skybound, my Seeing Double book, my Magic Upside Down book, along with a couple other downloads, as well as my At the Table lecture that you can get for $7.95. That's 2.5 hours worth of material. So you get my full normal lecture along with a bunch of extra fun bonus stuff, including some of my work on the Hot Rod.
Yeah, and speaking of which, that we didn't really get into the Hot Rod, and you know, I didn't.
It's hard to see over microphones.
It is certainly is. It's not an audible kind of a thing, but the point being is,
and
that
the colors changed.
I didn't know there was so much work that was actually into the Hot Rod. Just kind of usually think of the six force, but also just the handling and the visual, the angle, the visibility with your volunteer, the vanishes and things you do then also with the vanishes and reappearances and that little screen thing that you do that looks like a smartphone kind of where the colors change. That's amazing.
I think about it to an obsessive level.
It sounds like.
I will admit that freely.
Got a little OCD with that. So, and eventually you're going to be putting together a little DVD on that as well.
Yes. I was going to do a book, but I realized that, yeah, and I may do a little booklet of just a few things to start off with, but a full book explaining all this material and the proper way to do the paddle moves to make it deceptive. And when I say proper, I mean that's what I've discovered works best. But of course, you know, maybe you'll figure out something different. But a DVD will provide a visual for you so you know what it should look like.
Right.
And you can tailor it to your needs.
Right. Cool. And then the last thing, of course, I always ask my guests, since it's called the Magic Word Podcast, is what is your word? What's your phrase or philosophy of life? What do you live by?
What is my magic word or my phrase
of
philosophy of life?
Well, yeah, I don't mean like abracadabra. I mean, you know what I mean, is something that is important to you. It could be one word. I'm not going to give you suggestions of what others have used in the past. Some have been words. Some have been phrases. They have been perhaps mantras. They've been just some things when you wake up in the morning that you live for. It could be something different today than what it was yesterday.
I will admit it does change quite often because my expectations of the world change. But I will leave you with a quote that I actually mentioned to your friend lawyer today over at the Wild Collection, a quote from Oscar Wilde that I've always loved. Man is least himself when he speaks in his own person. And to me, what that says is you shouldn't be afraid to seek out other sides of you. Don't be afraid to explore different corners of yourself, different corners of your mind and your heart, and there's so much world out there for you to be integrated in, for you to discover. And hopefully during the course of that discovery, you will figure out who you truly are.
You'll discover yourself.
I hope so.
Yeah.
I haven't yet, but I'm getting there.
Well, you're still a young man when you're talking about all the years you've had.
My knees don't feel like it, but the rest of me is doing okay.
Well, good luck. Thank you very much, Eric.
Thank you so much, Scott. It's been great.
And so for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Eric Stevens. And this is Scotty out. Well, thank you, Eric. I appreciate you being my guest this week on the Magic Word Podcast, and thank you, listeners, also for tuning in and listening to this. I hope that you learned a lot out of this, and I think it was intellectually stimulating. There were a lot of good thoughts that he had on creating and how he is searching to become a better magician and how he goes about creating, and anyhow, I thought there was just a whole lot of stuff. You know, each week I have people as my guests, some of whom you know or have heard of, and some you haven't. I suspect that it's possible that you may not have heard of this guest from before, but hopefully now you've met a new friend and learned something from someone new that you had not met. So the next time that you happen to run across this gentleman or hear the name or in the future, whenever that he gets to be more well-known since he's up and coming, then you know who Eric Stevens is, because you can say, hey, I heard him first here on The Magic Word.
Well, now it's time for a quick product review. And I say a quick product review, it's because it's just going to be one thing. And typically, when we do give product reviews, they are things that have been provided from Murphy's Magic Supplies. This particular one is not. This comes from Card Shark out of Germany, and it's Roger Nico's The Bar Cup Reloaded. This is, as it says, the ultimate chop cup with a liquid load, and that's exactly what it is. It in re-envisioning, if you will, of the bar cup that he had before, but this one, at the end, not only can you do the regular chop cup routine, whether that you're using crochet balls or olives or whatever that you have, and ending with some fruit or giant olives or whatever that your final load might be, but also the as if that climax isn't enough, that as a kicker, that you can actually pour liquid out of this, so it will appear to be, let's say, some colored liquid that looks like bourbon or something, or that if you want to have water in there, that it could be looking like gin or vodka. And anyhow, the point is that this is a really cool prop, something that I know a lot of people have put into their acts and have featured, one of them being Carissa Hendricks, that has this, and she does a marvelous routine using this bar cup reloaded with a martini glass and has a great routine. One of the things, by the way, that in the video instructions that you get online when you purchase this cup from Roger Nico and the Card Shark, they have a video that will explain, of course, how to do it and the setup and how to clean it and care for it and the history of it and everything then as well. But also, as Roger suggests, is for you to find your own routine. Obviously, a chop cup, it lends itself to a lot of really good improvisation and plug and play, so you can do it short or you can do it long. If you're working at a bar or someplace where it's a restaurant that has a bar, and you might be walking around as a restaurant magician doing some strolling magic, this isn't something that you would necessarily carry around in your pocket for a variety of reasons. The prop itself is rather bulky, so it's something that if you are going to be, again, working behind the bar, ideally would be the best place. But if you're going to be doing a formal sit-down show and going to be performing, you can have this out of sight. To do the loads, you can do some body loads, but it's best if you have a servant and some other things that where you're going to be seated. You might be able to have them in your lap or something, or if you're going to be standing, again, kind of behind the bar, behind the table, so that you can do some of these loads. But I believe that with a little bit of thinking, of course, that you can do this in kind of a strolling situation. The problem is, obviously, that once you have poured out the liquid, then you're finished, and that's the end of it. So you have to go back someplace and then reload the cup, which, again, that's the name, the bar cup reloaded. So you need to go back and reload this little loadable thing that they have on the top, which is a beautiful gimmick and very well made. And I have to commend Roger for not stopping to think. Let me rephrase that. When I say not stopping to think, I mean that he has not stopped thinking about how to improve this, because it's been continuing to get better and better with each of these versions that he has released of the bar cup. And this is really an ultimate one that I really love. I've always liked the idea of having some liquid that you can pour out of the cup. And I had one many years ago that Tim Starr, I believe, had made from rings and things, going way back to the 70s, I believe, possibly. But it was a load that you would actually put in the cup, just a regular cups and ball routine. And then there was a thing that you stick inside the cup that had some liquid in it that you can actually pour some liquid out the final cup at the end, if you have produced a little shot cup or whatever. Anyhow, this makes sense. It's really perfect. You know, I'm thinking, for an example, there was a routine called Jigger Knot, in which you use a little jigger, and the different things happen with that. Danny Archer has an excellent routine that's in his lecture. I saw on Murphy's at the Table that was hosted by Gregory Wilson. If you get a chance to go and download that was really a great video. He's got a ton of really good ideas, but one of them was this little thing using a jigger, and I use that as a walk-around thing. It's just very clever. Anyhow, this idea, again, I'm getting kind of off the track, but those are all things kind of related, I guess, to bar routine or to something that is related to drinking adult beverages. And I would really highly recommend that. This is not an inexpensive item. It runs close to $200, but something that if you're going to be doing it on a regular basis, and particularly if you're working at a bar,
you should be receiving a lot of tips, because this is just a real fooler, a real kicker at the end, as I said, because it's more than just a regular chop cup, or that you would produce, you know, lemons and limes and oranges or large olives or whatever, because at the end you actually pour out some liquid into the shot glass or into a little martini glass or whatever kind of production item that you have at the end. So it's very clever, very well made, and again, Roger's to be commended for this, and this is available from Christian Schenck and the Card Shark, and it's called the Bar Cup Reloaded. Highly recommended. Well, that's going to be another thoughtful episode for this week of the Magic Word Podcast, and I want to again thank all of you for tuning in each week and to listening to this. We've got some more things lined up for you over the next few weeks that are going to be very exciting, not the least of which, of course, as we get close to the end of April, we'll be going to the Fechter's Finger Flicking Frolic, from which I will be reporting daily updates from the convention floor and letting you hear the voices of many of the people, and while I'm there, I hope to also sit down and record some longer podcasts with some of my friends and have some great conversations that you can enjoy, share, and learn from as well. So until next week, stay well, get booked, and don't be afraid to explore other sides of yourself. Then perhaps you might just discover who you really are. This is Scotty out.